Maboff!
This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And if you do enjoy the show, why not go to iTunes and leave a review? I mean, I don't check the reviews. I'm an artist. Well, maybe I'll check them just once. Let's be honest. For the most part, magicians are not the most creative bunch of people. The real secret to conjuring is that we learn our tricks from books, DVDs, and from the masters who have gone before us. Dom and Dumber, however, do things a little differently. Not only have they created their own innovative and exciting magic, they have also created their own genre of conjuring. They are sketch comedy magicians, combining everything they love from classic sketch comedians ranging from Abbott and Costello to Key and Peele with everything they love about the art of sleight of hand and illusion. On this week's episode of Scammapalooza, I'm joined by Dom Chambers and Baden Hammond as we talk about comedy, conjuring, and everything that goes in between. My name's Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. Two men, Dom Chambers and Baden Hammond, otherwise known as Dom and Dumber. Welcome to Scammapalooza.
Thank you for having us.
Hey. I suddenly become a little bit more ochre having you guys in here. Normally, I'm all high-pitched and squealy, but I know you guys so well that I can let the Aussie Nick through.
It's a little weird you're sitting on my knee, but that's fine. I have to roll with that.
So the two of you are magicians. I've known you both for several years, and so I know that you are... you said last time you did a radio show, you got introduced as Australia's top magicians.
Absolutely, and that was an understatement, so...
Yeah, it was probably a little bit light
on it. Light on.
So we'd probably prefer you to introduce us, you know, more aptly, if that's okay.
Sure. So they're two of Melbourne's magicians. Okay, I'll give you this. You are Australia's leading sketch comedy magicians.
Absolutely.
This is something that I have not seen outside of little in-jokes at magic conventions. You guys are combining magic and sketch comedy. You had your debut show last year at the Magic Festival. You got... an award of some description?
Did get an award. Candlelight Productions. Yeah, they came.
Oh my God. Okay, they've given that award out twice. I got it the first year.
You guys got it the second.
This is like, we are the Candlelight Productions scholarship for artistic excellence.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, we are artistically
such
excellent.
Artists.
We are artists. Yeah. But I had an argument with someone the other day about whether magic is an art. The Australia Council, which for our international guests is the peak funding body for arts grants and so on, have basically said that magic is not art. Therefore, they won't fund magic shows unless you can put in some, I don't know, interpretive dance or obscene puppetry or something. So do you think magic is art?
I definitely can see both sides of the argument. I can see why. No, hear me
out. Shut up, fence sitter. Baden, what do you think?
Right. It's definitely an art, Dominic.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah. No, I think, it's for some people, it's probably more of a commercial undertaking. But definitely, I think the reason we all get into it is it's an art form that we love, you know?
Yeah, but just because something's commercial doesn't mean that it's not
artistic. A painter can paint for commercial reasons, but yeah, doesn't mean they don't love it. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
So, I have no understanding of why they would say that it's not an art form. I mean, what's their basis for that? Do they justify that?
I think that magic is not very arty. And I will say that I don't think magic has come close to exploring the potential of it as an art form. Like, you look at theatre and dance and all the extraordinary risk-taking things that have done, magic has, for the most part, kept fairly safe and not taken massive risks.
For me, I think something becomes art at a certain level. So if you draw a stick figure on a piece of paper, well, some people would say it's a painting. For me, it's not necessarily art. If you do a piece of magic you've just performed from a magic shop that, you know, could make you look like an amazing magician, because that is the power of magic, is that you can be, and that is, again, one of the arguments, is that, you know, people can be made to look like the most amazing magician in the world with a Svengali deck, which they've purchased for $5. That's, you know, that's not art. But if you're really exploring and pushing the boundaries of magic, then you definitely should be considered art.
Damn straight. Well, that said, we're a couple of minutes in and that's all we've got left to say. So
let's sit
in silence for the next 45 minutes. I think the problem is that magic, one, it's, we're not a part of the arts community. You know, we don't, We don't act like artists, like people assume artists should act. We don't suffer for our art. We don't starve for our art. Even the people who, you know, are making the bare minimum amount of money are still making money and they're still out there doing it. And the amateurs are doing that by choice. Whereas in, I think, say, you know, you can have a painter who never sells a painting in their lifetime mm-hmm. and is considered a great artist. Whereas magicians, I mean, perhaps you're right. Perhaps it's not that the fact that it's commercial that makes it not art, but it's the fact that it's commercial that makes people assume that it's not art.
That's it. And I think for most magicians, probably they are pursuing it for commercial reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, who wants to do magic for free unless you're a hobbyist in his bedroom as a teenager learning? Maybe you get into it because you're passionate about it. But people who stay in it typically stay in it for commercial reasons, I think.
So what you're saying is magic is an art, but magicians are pretty shitty artists. Luckily, we're great business people.
Exactly.
Cool.
We're persuasive, right?
Well, you guys are great business people in that you've figured out a new niche, sketch comedy magic. Can you explain what that is to people who are not familiar with this genre that you guys have just invented?
But I guess, I mean, we didn't do it for a business. We're talking before about a couple of magicians who...
You went to the bank and said, yeah. I'd like a loan to start a sketch comedy magic.
It wasn't a business decision. We didn't think, oh, this hasn't been done before, so we can make bank on it. Unlike, you know, some people may find... We're even talking about a couple of performers who've found, you know, a niche in magic who are making a lot of money from it because they've found...
Who's that?
The performers who perform with their willies out.
The naked magicians.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, gotcha. Yep.
We wanted to keep our clothes on, though, so that mm-hmm. closed that door.
Mainly because, yeah, we're not shredded and probably...
Definitely not hench enough for that.
So sketch comedy magic, what can you...
You'd probably be better at this one. The way I see it, right, sketch comedy and magic... And, you know, the two things share one very common idea, right? And that's storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
The way I see it, you have a magician gets up on stage, tells a story with magic. You've got a comedian, particularly a sketch comedian, gets up, tells a story and enhances it with humor. So they both have that common thing. And so for us, it was like, let's tell an interesting story and let's enhance it with both the humor and the magic. And I mean, I think at the end of the day, right, the magic and the humor, they're both secondary. What comes first and foremost is that story. I think that's what we went into this wanting to do, was tell funny, interesting stories.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess also they have that link of the absurd. Someone was telling me the other day, they said magic just draws... magic is drawn to the absurd. That the idea of, like, here's a hat, now there's a rabbit in it is such a ridiculous idea. If we hadn't seen it 1,000 times before on the stage, you could imagine it on the, I don't know, surrealist art installation. Mm. So, and of course, absurdist comedy is something that's been around for many years. So there's that link as well, that magic is inherently a ridiculous concept.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think, I don't know, have you guys seen the Abbott and Costello sort of sketches from back in like the 40s and the 50s? They actually did a couple that had magic in them. And, you know, I feel like that's sort of what Dom and I are going for. We do have a bit of an Abbott and Costello act going. I mean, that's essentially what this is. You know, you'd be the Abbott, I'd be the Costello. And
I don't like that title at all.
Yeah.
You made it. Yeah.
It's an unfortunate one. But let's pretend we're back in the 40s and 50s. But, you know, I think they did it really well. It's that idea of, you know, they told stories and they did it in a really funny way with interesting characters. And that's what we're doing. And we're just enhancing that with a little bit of sneaky magic.
You mentioned Abbott and Costello. Who else are your sketch comedy inspirations?
Key and Peele, I think we both absolutely
so good.
Love.
I want to hate them because they're so popular and so like ubiquitous and everywhere. But, oh my God, they're so funny. Have you seen the trailer for their new film?
I have, and I'm on the fence about that. It's like basically a 90-minute sketch. And I'm like, I don't know if that's going to work.
Have you seen it yet?
No. Can you please just tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. it's difficult because the pitch is pretty much two kind of fairly middle-class, normal guys. One of them, his girlfriend leaves him, and on the same day, a little kitten appears on his doorstep. And so, you know, through the tears, he falls in love with this little kitten that he calls Keanu.
That's nice.
But it gets kidnapped or slash adopted by local gangsters. And so there's two kind of normal guys. One of them drives a minivan, I think he's a school teacher, have to kind of pretend that they're a lot harder, a lot tougher than they are, and go undercover to rescue the kitten. So it's like
a, now that yeah, sounds, what you just described sounds yeah, like a 5 minute Key and Peele sketch.
Yeah.
And yet this is going to be like a 90 minute movie.
So do they play, interesting, do they play multiple characters? No,
oh, no, just two guys. Oh, okay. Yeah. But both of these guys have had roles in major films and yeah, they are good actors. So I think they can, I think they
started on Mad TV, or at least I think Key did. Or
yeah. One yeah. Of yeah. Did, yeah. One of them,
which is another favorite. Mm. The old Mad TV days.
Yeah. So you love their stuff. Who else do you like?
I've started getting into, there's this, I'm pretty sure they're from Melbourne, Auntie Donna. Have you seen Auntie Donna?
Oh my God.
Okay.
I'll put a link to their memory, their card trick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, they're going like absolutely nuts on the internet right now.
Mm.
And they're doing a show at the Comedy Festival.
Awesome.
I'm not sure. Have they always been live performers or?
Yeah. Yeah. They were live performers for the last few years.
I've never seen them before. I've just come across the internet stuff in the last year and like, it's so good. So good.
Yeah. And they're really hard workers, even though their stuff is bizarre and ridiculous and absurd.
Oh, yeah.
The brief conversations I've had with them, you can tell that they work really, really hard and they're never happy with anything and they want to keep trying and, just to make it better. They're so good. They've got a new series, a web series called 1999, which is all set in an office in 1999.
Bigoted Bill.
Oh, a whole bunch of great stuff. Yeah. So can you, I mean, do you want to be Auntie Donna with magic tricks? You know, Key and Peele with magic tricks? Or do you want to, what do you want to bring?
I think we'd be closer to Key and Peele than Auntie Donna, but not as, I think Auntie Donna really quite bizarre. And
batshit insane.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, most of our sketches, the characters are at least somewhat believable.
They are believable. I think it's just really about celebrating incompetence, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of our sketches are embedded in that sort of absurdist notion that incompetent idiots could possibly get out of interesting situations because they're magicians. So, I mean, that was the whole premise for writing this show, wasn't it? Like, you know, what if a lawyer who was really, really bad at his job could get his client out using magic instead of actual law? So, you know, I don't know. I think that makes it unique, but yeah, who knows? Who's done that? I talked about Abbott and Costello before. They've done that idea of sketch comedy magic, but the magic was more of a gimmick. Whereas I think we're actually
doing the magic. So the magic exists inside of the story as well. It's not like we're doing a couple of characters and there's magic happens for sake of magic. It's that the person in the story is a magician, whether it be a lawyer who is useless but can do, you know, magic to perhaps for his client, or someone who's competing in the world championships with Jenga decides to just, you know, cheat his way to victory by, you know, levitating a tower. Or even
Jesus
appears.
Who's one of the great magicians.
Exactly. Mm. Greatest of our time.
Is there... I think I mentioned this to you, Dom, a few days ago. I have this theory that it's long-winded and tedious, but bear with me because it's also kind of offensive. No. Okay. So I have so there's this idea that in magic, the audience understand everything that is going on. And then at the moment that the magic happens, suddenly their perception of reality splits in two. And so it's like this hat is empty. No, wait, it's also got a rabbit in it. So it's like this, it fractures and what we thought was reality is suddenly wrong. Whereas in comedy, the opposite happens, which is you'll have these two completely different ideas and they'll be sort of thrust together in a way that makes sense. So even, say, with a pun, you'll have a word or a phrase that has two meanings. And so it kind of comes together. You get a joke.
Yeah, right.
You don't get a magic trick.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
understand. The whole point is that you don't get it. You don't understand what just happened.
Mm.
So how do you, as people who are trying to do both of those things at the same time, how do you stop them from cancelling each other out?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally a fair point and it's true, right?
So you're cancelling the show?
We pretty much call it off because our show doesn't make sense, theoretically.
It's over.
It doesn't make that much sense. In a sense that, you know, traditionally, I suppose, like a sketch comedy and combining magic, it almost shouldn't work. And I think we were a bit unsure about how it was going to be received when we first wrote the show, we first performed it. We were a little bit, going into this really just whatever. We'll see whether people like it. And people liked it. Taking it to the comedy festival, we'll see if people like it again. Maybe not. About your theory. So, You're right. I think that there are almost separate parts, right? Which we don't try and combine, you know, the laugh, ha ha ha, with the moment. I feel that we have both.
They're distinct moments.
Yeah, distinct moments.
To build on each other.
Often, not always, but often our sketches work in the sense that it's a ha 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 sketch.
And then there's a magic.
And then at the end, which sort of just rounds up the sketch.
I think that comes back to the point, too, I was making earlier about storytelling, right? A magician will typically enhance a story with a magical climax, right? Whereas I think a good comedian will enhance a story all the way through with comedy, okay? And hopefully, you know, most jokes have a climax as well. But I think a good comedian gets you laughing the whole way through, right? It's a funny story. It's interesting banter. And I think that's how we've combined it in most of our sketches. There is a, you know, there's a funny story along the way, and then there's a bit of a magical climax. And look, in some of the stories, we integrate the magic throughout the sketch as well. But look, I think the reason it works together is because of that idea that there is that commonality in the storytelling, which is common to both magic and comedy. But yeah, I guess I also challenge your notion a little bit about comedy only being about conflicting ideas coming together to make sense. I mean, that maybe describes a pun, maybe one-liner. But I think some of my favorite comedians... really, the reason they're funny is because they tell interesting, relatable stories that the audience can identify with. It's not necessarily classical joke structure. It's just a funny character, a funny situation, interesting circumstances, an interesting story. You know what I mean?
No, I think you're wrong. And I think you've completely misunderstood what I was talking about. I mean, yeah, sure. I gave a pun as a simple example for your feeble mind to be able to No, but...
Dumb, dumb, ladies and gentlemen.
I
think it was like a narrow definition of comedy.
Okay, I gave that as a narrow definition. Like, it was certainly simplistic. But the idea that, okay, in the textbook, which I would not dig out, the phrase that is used is a juxtaposition of two mutually exclusive frames of reference. Bang. First year philosophy, right there.
You can turn in an art into a science here.
Absolutely. Yeah, you do. But that's what you know, art criticism is about. It's trying to sort of, you know, bottle lightning and figure it out. But it's the basic idea that you have, you know, in comedy, you get the joke. You get it. You understand. It comes together. You understand it. Even if it's just subconsciously, you get it. Whereas with magic, you don't understand it. And it's a different emotional response. And, you know, you're combining those two emotional responses that are very, very different. And it sounds like you said, you're not doing that. You're not sort of going, you know, the punchline is not a rabbit coming out of a hat or finding their playing card.
It's something that just enhances the story. I think it's probably like, you know, when you watch a movie that might have, you know, magic in it, but magic that's achieved through special effects or because the character's a wizard or whatever it might be, you sort of don't sit there and go, oh, but gee, how did they do that? I want to go talk to the CGI team and really get under this and figure it out. You just accept that it's there because it enhances the story that's being told. And I think that's what we've tried to do, right? Is we've tried to tell a story where the magic is integrated into a way which works and makes sense in the story. And because our audience is focused on the story, they're more interested to see the story progress rather than sit there going, oh, hold on, back out. I want to know how they did that. So I think because there's more emphasis on the story and less on the actual magic, it's perhaps a smoother road.
Are you on board with this, Dom? You seem like
I agree with that.
I just want to kind of have a fight with you guys. I'm feeling really antagonistic right now.
Okay, so yeah, no, all right. I've got a
Don't be so agreeable, Dom.
Can someone laugh? No, I'm going to challenge Nick. Yeah, I'll take him on. Can someone?
Hang on, I'm going to take my shirt off. Okay, go.
Can someone laugh at something that they don't get? So can laughter be an appropriate response to seeing very simple example? I make a coin disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Would someone laugh at that?
Yeah. I mean, mostly because of your sloppy, sleight of hand. No, I know exactly what you mean. Like you get to, but I still think that is a reaction of someone who is surprised and it's laughter out of surprise. And not necessarily out of humor. I mean, I'm not saying you guys need to quit what you're doing. I guess I'm just saying that there is an issue there. I think those things are kind of different. That said, okay, horror films, something is scary and it can be scary and funny at the same time.
Yeah,
and we can have both of those experiences. So you know, on a practical level, even though they are, you know, literally polar opposites, we still get in there. But you know what? People go to comedy for the same reason they go to magic, is because they want an extreme emotional response in a safe space. And yeah, giving them that.
What do you think about Matt King?
Matt King. Yeah, I love Matt King. But Matt King, most of the time, the moment that he does magic, Matt King is the best comedy magician in the world. He's been in Las Vegas for years.
Yeah.
And
agreed.
When I first saw his act, I was a little disappointed. Like, sort of like, because I'd seen all these jokes before because they've been stolen by the other magicians. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, very, very funny. But most of the time when the magic happens, there's a beat before and after where he will, you know, he'll say, here's the gag. And then there's a beat. He's bang, blow them away. And then while they're still trying to catch their breath from being amazed, hits them with another gag. He doesn't ever say, I mean, occasionally he does, but he says, okay, here's a great example. He'll say, I've seen him do a gag where he takes off his shoe, tips out a Fig Newton, like a biscuit, which is a running gag in his show. And then he will then tip out an enormous rock and pick up the rock. And I think the punchline is, he goes, they're Rockports, which is the brand of shoe. It's very funny. I'm not Matt King. I can't. But I've seen him do it where he says they're Rockports and then tips out the rock. So the moment they see the rock, they get the joke, and they also get that moment of, oh my God, where did the rock come from? And it's not as funny because it's like, haha, what? They're not Shredder X. But when he falls out, what, there's a rock? And then while he picks it up and says, they're Rockports, he gets the laugh and he gets the gasp. So he makes sure he separates the two, even just by a beat. And that's enough.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you do need to, so it can work as long as you do have that separation.
Just that beat, I think, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to disagree with that.
I saw another guy who did Gypsy Thread, which is for listeners, you get a long piece of thread, break it up into lots of little pieces. You get one piece held in your hands, so maybe like 5 centimeters long. The rest of them you roll up in a little ball and you sort of attach it to the middle of the string. Mm. And then when you pull it apart, it's all back together in beautiful. One piece. It looks beautiful. And I saw a famous Chuck Fain did it. And he told a joke the whole way through. And then he said the punchline as he pulled it open. And the audience just went, they just didn't know what to do because he did the two at exactly the same moment.
Do you know what the problem is here, Nick?
Yep.
I'm going to steal something that Pete Holmes, one of my favorite comedians, said in one of his stand-up routines. And that was the fact that magicians have it a lot harder than comedians because there's no inbuilt innate response in humans when they see a magic trick. You think about it, comedians are relying on an innate response, right, which is laughter. They know if it's successful because they're going to hear laughter. When a magic trick goes over, we don't have any inbuilt response, right? For everyone, it's different. Some people get shocked in a silence. Other people gasp. So you could do a trick really well, and then the audience could all just be silent because they're in confused awe. But can you imagine how good it would be if we magicians could rely on an innate response?
What would that be?
What? Yeah. Check out the Pete Holmes routine.
He's got a great one.
He's got a great one. It's sort of like, what if people just sort of went and sort of had like a spasm? And you would know when you heard that spasm sound, yes, this magic trick
nailed
was awesome.
It. Nailed it. Yeah, yeah. Because people always seem to, like, what are some of the odd reactions you get to tricks? Like, you mentioned people laughing at your coin magic, which I think is rude, but you
know, I had a flaming cross put in my face.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, demon, witch.
You've got that? Yeah. Because there was that magician in, Wayne Hatchin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was in Melbourne a few years ago who was had his face set on fire on TV. Absolutely.
Someone who thought he was a demon, so they tipped a bottle of alcohol on him and lit a match to exorcise him. Yeah,
I mean, those responses are real. There are people that freak out, particularly when magicians like Wayne Hatchin who present those sort of like stigma type effects, and they're creepy. And if you're like, you know, hardened religious person, that's going to freak you out.
Are either of you religious? I don't know that.
I'm not. Oh. I went to a Catholic school.
Yeah, you did. That's what I'm thinking. Are you religious?
Yeah, I'm a Scientologist.
No, you're not. No, I'm kidding. You're a vegan.
That's like... that's probably the closest to a religion I'm going to get.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
This is great. I can just ask you all sorts of personal questions because it's a podcast. It's appropriate. It's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you going to stick with that hair, Dom, or is that... just a face.
I was thinking of going to yours sometimes.
Oh, really?
Actually.
To my rock? Yeah. To the...
No, I quite like it.
No, it's good. It's like Jeff Bridges in Iron Man. Is the look that I'm going at the moment. Yeah, it's a good look. How did you both get into magic? I don't know that story for either of you. Dom, you started quite young.
Yeah, I did. I was 5. So, what's that like?
So was I.
3 years ago. Oh, were you really?
Yeah.
It was, yeah, in the family for me. Not that, so my granddad taught me magic. He wasn't a magician. He is now. But he learnt magic because he wanted a way to connect with his grandchildren, me. And yeah, so that was quite nice. It was something that me and my granddad did for a few years. And, I still see my grand, he lives in another country, see him maybe once every 2 years, and we still have that connection. So, which is pretty cool.
I've noticed that with your magic is that you are always trying to make a connection with the people you're performing for. You're not like a lot of magicians. It's like, I'm up here, you're down there. Look at me. I am your God. Worship me. Whereas you always kind of want to, you seem to bring people in and you're very friendly.
I think it's something you do very well.
Bringing people in or?
Yeah. Look, to me, you're a God, but yeah. I think you, it's something that you do well. And I think that, I think the most successful magicians do. I mean, okay. Like even David Copperfield, who is
so good at that.
Yeah. He could definitely just stand there and be, I am God. I am David Copperfield, because he's got that, you know, that God physique and that sort of aura about him. But he's also such a likable guy, and you can just connect with him when you sort of watch him, right?
Yeah. Even someone like Jeff McBride, who's got that same vibe about him. He's got that sort of, you know, dresses like a proper 90s kind of cheesy magician. And yet he does Miser's Dream, which for listeners who don't know, is basically coins behind the ear. And he does a whole routine with a kid from the audience where he never really speaks to the kid at all until the very end. He just brings this, he manages to get the kid up on from the audience on the stage. The kid's doing magic and making coins up here. He's making coins there. Got this incredible bond without ever really speaking.
That's the best part of the show.
Yeah. All the other stuff. He's like, oh yeah, it's good. But the bit with the coins and the kids. Yeah. Right. What about you, Ben? How'd you get into it?
I just remember being a big-eyed kid at the South Bank Market, and there was
as in like wide-eyed, or just like you just had some sort of weird.
No, I was literally like had huge eyes. Yeah. They were too big for my head. And there was a magician there,
Adam Lawrence. Jim Adam Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Adam Lawrence is.
He's still around.
Yeah,
he is still around. And I emailed him a couple of years ago to say, "Hey, you're the reason I got into magic," and he replied, and it was very sweet. He was selling magic tricks on South Bank, and you know, I'd had a magician at my 10th birthday party, so I'd sort of.
Who was that?
I cannot remember. From the photos, he was very, very, very old, and if he's still alive, it means he's a vampire.
Oh, I've got a good one. When I was three, I had a magician at my birthday party. His name was Uncle Alan. And we were looking, trying to find his videotapes and looking him up. And because my parents thought he was brilliant. I can't remember him that well. There are photos. And I Googled him to see if he was a website. And not even kidding, Uncle Alan, newspaper story about kids performer Uncle Alan arrested for like indecent behavior around children.
So, I was going to say with a name like Uncle something.
Yeah.
You sort of think it was
implied. So my parents basically hired a pedophile for my third birthday party.
That is fantastic. Yeah. No, that's actually horrifying. Yeah, Jesus. Anyhow.
No, I want to talk more about pedophiles. There is that problem, though, with magicians, in that, like, because they've got the names like Uncle This and all of that sort of thing, and there's just always that like, creepy thing that people always assume. And it's the worst because, I mean, I know, like, scout leaders, sports coach, all of those people, it's like there's that... that weird thing vibe that people have. Like I know a couple of magicians who have been at weddings and they've pulled out balloon animals and started doing balloons, and people like have said, what sort of grown man carries balloon animals around in his pocket? And it's like someone who likes to make balloon animals and give them to people because it makes them happy.
That's
like,
right. And also happens to have a well in their basement with a girl in the bottom of it.
Anyway, moving on. This is why you two need religion.
Come see our show. We've got plenty of religion in the show.
Yeah, there is a lot of religion in the show. You just mentioned, though, being at your work. Do you have a day job?
Okay, Dom? No, I work one day a week. Yeah, I think that I've come to terms with the fact that I am now a full-time magician. I finished university last year, and after university, I was kind of just like, you know, just chilling out. I was like, that's okay. I don't need a job yet. I just finished university. And I only ever did magic throughout my schooling and throughout university, children's birthday parties or adult corporate entertainment, stuff. The corporate stuff. After that, I thought I could, you know, chill out for a little bit and maybe find a job. And I did find a job working at, I like making videos, and I work at a digital media department at a football club. And that's only one day a week because I wanted to focus on magic. And I think, yeah, I was always sort of a little bit in denial about the fact that I had decided to take magic on as a full-time job. I think it's because the idea was a bit scary, but now I think I just have to say, yeah, I'm doing it.
What did you study at uni?
Media and communications. Oh, I think okay. I was just loved making film and video.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I'm going to get back to you, Baden, as well, but I want to take a sidetrack because media communication, the last kind of month or so, your social media presence has exploded. You've made
massively
a series of about 4 or 5 videos.
Yeah. So I've made probably about in the past years, probably been about 10 videos, three of which have gone viral. Mm-hmm. I'd definitely say viral. And then the other ones have sort of just been floating around a little bit. It's been,
when we're talking viral, I mean, we're talking like on your, so they've got, you know, tens of thousands of views on your own page,
yeah.
But a lot of them with your permission have been rehosted and it's up, it's literally millions and millions of people have seen you doing magic.
Yeah. I wish I could say that that was, you know, on my own account, my own uploads, but the nature of social media, unfortunately these days is that it's becoming more and more difficult to distribute content. Two of my videos, I was able to get that following on my own page. They reached 1 million hits.
What is your
Facebook
page?
Dom Chambers. I think it's just search Dom Chambers. You can find it. Yeah. I think it might be Dom Chambers Magic on Facebook. But yeah, there's another one, which I think has had about, last time I counted, about 20 million views, but on my own page, about 60,000 views. It's a little bit, you know, I guess I don't make videos with the intention of being seen by millions of people. I love making videos and it's fun. And it's, I guess, a great kick to have that recognition and see that your video is being seen by people. But I guess you would like to have those views on your own page because it's so tough now. It's so, especially with algorithms and the way that Facebook works with YouTube material. And it's very difficult to distribute your own stuff unless you have that massive initial following.
But that because you mentioned Auntie Donna, for example, who, they've got hundreds of thousands of views. And they will then be able to take that and translate that into bums on seats at the comedy festival.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So for you, these videos are ads. For all intents and purposes of what you can do, and you want to build up the fans and the likes so they'll come to your live shows. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically the idea. I'm just not sure at this stage if I've really hit, I've got a few likes on my page, but I don't know if I've hit any quality likes. People from Melbourne, I think they've come from.
A lot of them are international, aren't they?
Yeah. I'd say at least half of them.
You've been getting some weird fan mail from international fans.
Yeah,
I'm
getting fan mail, which is
interesting. Yeah.
You had a viral video a while back, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I did a video which people always, I won't name it. I'll put it up on the thing as well. This is all the post for this is just going to be videos. I won't. Everyone calls it the something video, how the trick is done, which is fine because you figure it out straight away very quickly. But if you don't know, it's a really cool little.
That's amazing.
With your mind. It's basically me walking through my house playing board games with my friends over the course of
the thing is, you figure it out, but then there are things in there that disprove what you've figured out.
Yeah, like right in the middle of the video, I drink a glass of milk and eat an Oreo and
amazing.
And it's the most amazing bit. It's I just drink it and they go, wait, no, that's impossible. And there was some of the because people come up with their crazy theories and there are people saying it's really lo-fi the way we did it. But they're going, oh, well, you know, you can actually use this add-on for, for Adobe or Premiere. Oh, no, yes, you can see here where they've edited it and cut it. And no, it's just one shot, me in the house doing crazy stuff. And it was great. But it wasn't as, I mean, it's not 20 million. I think it was like 150,000 on YouTube.
And that's better than any of my
YouTube
videos.
YouTube is so a hard cooking a crack.
That's awesome. That's
but sketch comedy magic on YouTube, that's got to, it's got to, you got to be able to get something.
We gave it a nudge. I think we've probably got about 30 views on one of our videos.
Yeah.
It posts about 3 videos with combined maybe like 80 views. So it's climbing.
Yeah.
It's a growing market.
Yeah. But so what's the goal then for you guys? I mean, what is the goal for Dumb and Dummy? Do you just want to do the shows? Because I mean, I do Jonestown, which is weird, absurdist narrative-based sketch comedy with Sarah Jones. And that's just, we do it because we think it's funny and it's jokes that make us laugh. And then we try and force our friends and family to come and watch us make dicks of ourselves. Whereas for you guys, I feel like it could be something else. I mean, it could be a TV show. It could be like you know, Barry and Alan. Or
that would be awesome.
I don't know if anyone would watch it on TV.
Yeah, I think the element of magic is a lot more fun when it's live.
Mm-hmm. So you don't like TV magic?
I'm not a big fan of
TV. You don't like
TV
Dom's
magic.
Videos?
That, I think that's a little bit different. In fact, funnily enough, the ones that have gone most viral are probably not your magic ones.
They're not, and they don't go viral. I mean, some have magic in them, but they're not going viral because of the magic that's in them. And I don't actually...
The one where you drink the beer, for example, is magical, but it's not really a magic
trick. Yeah, it's basically... It's like, pick up the cool. Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah. I just drink a lot of beer, I guess.
He drinks four beers in 7 seconds or something. Yeah. Although it's not technically 7 seconds, as people
actually,
in the comments have pointed out.
I made a big call. I called it as 5 seconds, and it was, I think, like 8.3 seconds. Yeah, yeah. Which, even if I had done it in 5 seconds, was not the record. As someone pointed out, the record was 4-point-something seconds. and, yeah, someone also pointed out that he thought they weren't real-size pint glasses. He was pretty close to cracking the case.
Wow. Oh, God. People are slow. Baden, you... I know the two of you run it, but I always see Baden as the... You're both involved in Top Hat Tuesday.
Baden's the mastermind.
You're the mastermind.
That's how I met Dom.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much a nobody in the magic scene.
Still am.
until I decided to start up a monthly magic show because there was a bit of a gaping hole left after the wonderful Magic Mondays stopped, which used to be a wonderful show in Melbourne.
But yeah, Dante's.
That disappeared for a couple of years. And so I really wanted to start it again. And so I messaged a bunch of magicians who, of course, all had the same response. Who the hell is this guy? And Dom was one of the few people that actually responded affirmatively and said, hey, that sounds like a cool idea. I have no idea who you are, but let's give it a go. And we caught up, and that was four years ago. And now Top Hat Tuesdays has been running as long. So
yeah, so it's one Tuesday a month, and it's about you bring in an MC and four magicians.
Correct, yeah.
What I love about it is that you have a very open door policy in that you will, you know, if someone is a decent magician, you'll let them perform. Whereas... Yeah, is there anyone crap? Oh, no, you've had crap people on, haven't you?
Yeah,
made mistakes. Look, mistakes have been made.
Nick, as someone who...
What was the name of the guy?
We have a blacklist, Nick.
Do you have a blacklist? Because Dante's had a blacklist. They had a blacklist. Well, there was talk of a blacklist. I don't know. I'm sure the guys who ran it will be quick to let me know if there was a
blacklist. Possibly a more like politically based blacklist.
Yeah, from what I can tell, it was politically based. And there was like, you know, one of the organizers didn't like someone or someone had done something to someone else or was a member of the wrong organization, they're not allowed to perform. Whereas you guys, if someone's a crap magician, did you have the guy, what's his name? The guy, you can say it because he's that awful that I think.
I don't know which one because
I think you know you're getting that. We didn't end up having him on.
El Suavo.
El Suavo.
We did not end up having him on. Almost ended up having him on because I looked him up and went, oh, this looks all right. Booked him, and then I think
I saw him at your show, Nick, the Variety Collective.
Oh, the Variety Collective that someone else had booked him for.
Yeah. So you obviously weren't hosting that night.
No.
But I was there.
I think Dom came screaming over the hills going, D, book this guy, what are you doing? What are you doing? And so
he basically...
It almost happened.
He talk us through what he did.
Yeah. His grand climax was to levitate a dildo, which... It's like the old zombie illusion where you sort of have something floating behind a curtain, but it was a dildo, which he then proceeded to fellate on the stage. So we didn't book him. So he wasn't our worst performer because he didn't perform.
Correct. Yeah.
But we dodged that ball. Yeah. But we've, you know, yeah.
We've got our share of stories.
Yeah, fair enough. You let me perform, so I'm happy. but it is a great, it is inclusive. It is, you know, El Suavo aside, it is an inclusive night that encourages people to bring their A game and to bring their best stuff. And it's got a great backstage area at Club 86.
There, yeah, we found the right spot now. Which is good.
Yeah. It used to be at Charlton's.
It did.
With Charlton's Pool Hall, which
the worst part about that was that you had to come down that seedy alleyway in Chinatown, literally opposite a Triple X Club.
I love Charlton's.
It was amazing. It was like, yeah, you'd go down, so down Chinatown, which is great because it creates this sort of vaguely edgy atmosphere. But then you turn left down an alleyway and the alleyway was like rubbish bins and graffiti literally on the walls. Yeah. It looked like something like you would imagine, like police cars racing through in a, in a, you know, 80s
it looked like a still out of comedy. Sin City is what it looked like.
Exactly, yeah, like Club X, back entrance to Club X.
There's like a cage from a nightclub there as well.
Yeah. And then you'd go in and you go into an elevator which smelt of urine. And then
it runs at about minus 1 kilometer an hour.
Yeah, and it'll rattle to the top. And the club itself was all right, except it was covered in mirrors, so you'd have to kind of...
And the floor was always sticky.
Yeah, that's right.
Smelled like piss. But other than that, it was pretty good.
That is a vibe. Right. It did have a nice vibe.
I love Charlton.
They were good
so
shows.
Much.
They were good shows. But Club 86 is beautiful and a great, great place to perform. And now you've got the projector up and the smoke machine and everything. It's a nice feel.
Yeah, and you're right. We are pretty welcoming. You know, we'll give someone a crack and give it their best shot. And, you know, if they're no good, then
yeah,
don't come back. Don't come back. No,
sit in the corner with El Suave. Baden, what? Because you have a day job.
I do.
I'm not 100% sure what it is. It involves an office. And
we probably
won't
talk about it very long because it's not very interesting.
Okay.
Well, I find it interesting, but no, I don't think it's podcast interesting.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. That's what we got. It's got to be different.
No, I'm a suit by day because I've got a commerce background and I'm currently at Telstra in risk management.
Ooh.
Full stop, end of story.
What is risk management?
Like enterprise risk management. So,
we should have said enterprise.
Yeah, right. So, like, just like product, like doing product risk assessments and like strategy risk assessments. And
we're going to, you know, here's our new product.
We want to do this.
Is this going to work?
What are the risks that this will present? How do we deal with it? How can we avoid them?
Okay.
That sort of thing. So, my job has been risk averse.
And now, sketch comedy magic.
Is completely risk taking, so they balance.
They balance.
I've got like equilibrium in my life.
Okay, give me a serious risk assessment of. And when you say risk assessment, you don't mean, hey, here's this new phone, it might electrocute people. You mean a risk assessment like it might fail as a product.
Yeah, like it might not be picked up by customers, might not reach sales targets.
Yep.
Blah 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 blah.
Okay, give me the risk assessment on Dumb and Dumber. Like, where's this?
We'd be about a moderate risk.
Uh-huh.
In the sense that I think we might break even.
That'd be so good. I'd be so stoked with that.
We break even. We are rolling it.
Can your new show be called A Moderate Risk?
Breaking Even.
And it's just lots of vaguely dangerous tricks, like a, you know, like sword swallowing, but it's a really short sword, and, you know, like a guillotine, but it's not very sharp.
I'm not even joking. We do have like a Richter scale for risk at Telstra, and any big organization does, really. Every risk gets rated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, against certain criteria so that we can actually quantify it. And I probably should do it for Dumb and Dumber.
You should have already done that. Yeah. I would love for you to be able to do that. I think that'd be
at least excellent. If we fail, we can say, yeah, well, the risk assessment was high, so we knew what we were in for.
Now, people could be listening to this at any time, so we have no idea if they've missed the dates for your performances. Can you hit us up with when and where we can see?
Sure. We absolutely can. So we are on at the 86 on the 8th, 9th and 10th of April and the 15th, 16th and 17th of April. So that's 2 Friday, Saturday, Sunday runs. We've also got a sneaky preview show coming up on the 3rd of April, if you like cheap preview shows.
I do like cheap preview shows. And what about the Magic Festival? Are you bringing this show to the Magic Festival or are you...
Well, this one's already been at the Magic Festival last year.
So it won't
be there again, but hopefully there'll be a Dumb and Dumber
There are whispers of maybe a Dumb and Dumber appearance in the next one.
Yeah.
Maybe they will. I don't know.
Possibly.
But you're doing a solo show.
I'm doing a solo show. What's it called? Random.
Nice, because your name's Rand.
I see what you did there.
And it explores your love of Ayn Rand. Just Fountainhead, Atlas Shrugged. Just really
ruined the grand finale, but
that's
fine.
That's it, yep. I would love
the deep commentary within it that was meant to be discovered later on, but
later on in the car ride. I get it. Yeah, true happiness and satisfaction can only come from an ultimately selfish society.
But yeah, random.
Random.
Melbourne Magic Festival.
Well, thank you very much for coming on Scampalooza. We did, like, we talked magic, we talked magic ethics, we talked sketch comedy, we talked religion, we talked risk assessment. We talked,
what's
like
more risk assessment, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you know what, you never want to give them all the risk assessment. You always want them
taste, leave them wanting more,
just a hint of risk assessment. Next time,
this has been Scammapalooza. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au.